Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Today. So glad you joined us. I'm Bill Arnold, and this is Live the Promise. We're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So welcome to Live the Promise. You know, yesterday when I was in the show, we were talking about being more neighborly, loving God and loving your neighbor, which I was trying to do last night, except my neighbor changed the password on his Wi-Fi, so it's no more free Wi-Fi, so it's getting harder to love him. Anyway, do you find yourself... Big question today. Do you find yourself living a frantic lifestyle characterized by the pursuit of perfection? All right. Has this kind of lifestyle left you spiritually, emotionally, and physically drained? If so, this hour is for you. Of course, your first thought is, I don't have the time for this hour. But the truth is, this hour really is for you then. And my guest today is Shauna Nyquist. She joins me to help us understand how we can live a life of meaning and connection instead of pursuing for perfection. And a couple of quick announcements before we begin. I want to get into the conversation with Shauna, but I want to give a special welcome to our friends listening on our new 93.1 FM in Waterloo, Iowa. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-877-933-2484 and ask for a new listener welcome packet. And at least one-third of the world's children live in extreme poverty, and many are undernourished, can't go to school, and they're actually unhealthy. And by becoming a compassion sponsor, you provide hope, love, and protection for a child who might otherwise become a victim of extreme poverty. $38 a month connects a child living in poverty with a loving church-based child sponsorship program. Visit myfaithradio.com to change the life of a child at risk. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest today, and we'll bring her on. Shauna Nyquist is the author of Present Over Perfect, Savor Bread and Wine, Cold Tangerines, and Bittersweet. Shauna is a bookworm, a beach bum, an enthusiastic home cook, and a passionate gatherer of people. She's married to Aaron, and they live in Chicago with their two boys, Henry and Mac. Shauna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, when I was reading chapter one of your book, I got to this point where it said, my regrets, how many years I bruised people with my fragmented, anxious presence. How many moments of connection I missed. Too busy, too tired, too frantic, and strung out on the drug of efficiency. Ooh, you got me early.
So I'm not alone.
Not alone. But so nice to have you on Live the Promise. We always like to start each show discussing a passage of Scripture. Something chosen by you, something we'd love to know what God's been speaking to you lately these days.
Well, you know, the verse that I've been kind of keep coming back to is this one in 1 Thessalonians, and I love the Message version of it. I've got it right here. Let's see.
Just take your time.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You're kidding.
1 Thessalonians.
I'm totally kidding.
1 Thessalonians 4:7. God hasn't invited us into a disorderly, unkempt life, but into something holy and beautiful on the inside as the outside.
Ooh, I love it.
I love it, too. And I think we live in a world today that values the outside so much.
Mm-hmm.
The what's measurable, what you can see, what you can put on social media, what you can measure in dollars or on a scale. And I think there's so much beauty in devoting yourself to making a life that's meaningful on the inside, not just what it looks like to other people on the outside.
We're trained almost to just observe what's on the outside, aren't we?
We really are.
We're not even rooting around on what's going on inside the heart.
I think that is such a part of our culture right now that we're very taken by beautiful outsides, and we don't always have enough time to look at what's underneath the surface. But I think that's really where the best of life is.
Mm-hmm. And part of what I've loved about parts of your book is you are showing us your insides and letting us see your heart and mistakes you feel like you have made and the brokenness you've suffered. And that's all very encouraging. I mean, we connect at our levels of brokenness. And the book, Present Over Perfect, has been already inspiring to me.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot.
Well, good. Let's talk about your backstory a little bit. How did you come to know Christ?
I grew up in a great Christian home. I'm a pastor's kid. And from my earliest memories, I remember the idea of a good God and a saving God who puts us on a path and lets us partner with him to make the world better. I grew up in a world where that was the story I was told all my life. And then when I was in college, like most college kids, I had to decide if that was going to be my story or just kind of my history. And it felt like a story I wanted to continue. It felt like this is something I want to own and develop, and I want to be a person of faith throughout my life. And so there you go.
I love it. Let's talk a little bit about productivity and how that became really an idol in your life.
Well, you know, I'm a Midwesterner, and as I mentioned, a pastor's daughter, and I come from a family of hard workers, people who farm and run companies and do sheet metal, and I got a job when I was 11, and I have always been a part of an environment that values hard work and getting things done and being responsible. And I think from most of us, from when we're very little, we decide a couple things that are going to be our things. You know, I wasn't the most creative. I wasn't the most this. I wasn't the smartest. I wasn't but I could get it done. I would never let you down. Mm-hmm. I would always show up early and leave late. And so I think that became pretty early on part of my identity, part of what I wanted people to know about me, and part of how I felt kind of valued in the world.
Kind of the above and beyond awards, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't special in a lot of other ways, but I could get it done. And that I think it helped me to get jobs that I loved and be included in things I wanted to, but it also took a tremendous toll on my body and my soul and my relationships. And so it was a good thing until it wasn't anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know the idol of work and productivity, although is a very good thing in my opinion, it somehow prevented your life from being present and living the life God had for you. What were some other idols that can prevent us from being present?
You know, I think, again, anything that you put in the place of connection and presence and kind of being in your real life. So for some people, it's dieting. For some people, it's shopping. For some people, it's being obsessive about relationships or codependence, or for some people it's numbing out and zoning out and watching TV. For some people it's compulsive exercise. There are things we all do to not face the reality of our lives. And that's sort of what this book is all about, is about identifying and then walking away from the things we keep, the things that we grab onto to make us feel safe, instead of being truly safe and truly connected and truly in our own lives.
So, Shauna, would you say that it had to start for you to learn how to say no a little bit better?
Absolutely. I think one of the first real practical steps for me, and it was really hard for me, it's still sometimes hard for me. I'm getting better at it, but it especially right at the beginning, learning to say no was tremendously difficult. I felt like a kindergartner.
Mm-hmm. There's a chapter in your book, and you start with saying, some people are very uncomfortable with the idea of disappointing anyone. They think that if you're kind, you'll never disappoint anyone. They think that if you try hard enough, if you manage your time well enough, if you're selfless enough, prayerful enough, godly enough, you'll never disappoint anyone. And these people are headed for a rude awakening, aren't they?
I think so, or at least, you know, I was. I think for many years I thought if I just was a little more organized, if I just was a little more prayerful, then I could finally meet the needs of absolutely everyone who asked. And I would never have to say that horrible word, no. And what I found is that learning to say no enabled me to say yes to the things that really matter to me.
Mm-hmm. What was, give me an example of the first time you said no and you started to sweat, like, I cannot believe I'm saying no.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, I for me, they came both professionally and personally. I remember professionally, you know, a lot of a writer's job is freelance. Mm-hmm. So in addition to writing books, you know, some of what you do is you write articles or you speak at events, and you want to be known, or at least I wanted to be known as someone that, you know, could always be counted on. Mm-hmm. Whenever this magazine or this conference came, I wanted to say, like, yep, I'm there for you. Obviously, I'm in. Coach, put me in. And when I first had to say no, or, you know, decided to say no to a couple of those, I mean, it took me paragraphs. You know, I would, you know, I love you. I care about you. I'm invested in what you're doing. I believe in you. But for me, for my family, I mean, I had to explain so much. They were probably like, fine, just say no this time mm-hmm. around. But for me, it was really difficult. And there's that fear, I think, especially with any kind of freelance work, that if you say no, those opportunities will never come again, that you have to strike while the iron's hot, that you have to take every opportunity you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So that felt really scary to me.
Well, there is a little bit of truth to that. Everybody feels that, you know, you're as good as your last book, you're as good as your last performance, and what happens if the phone stops ringing? Then what?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and I had someone say to me, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, and work begets more work. So you're out speaking, and then all of a sudden somebody comes up to you and says, hey, we want you to speak at our event.
Yeah. And I had someone in publishing say to me, oh, I heard that you're slowing down your deadlines. I heard that you're not doing as much of this or that, and you're kind of reworking your work life. And I said, yeah, I am. And she said, well, I mean, just so you're thinking about it practically, if your publisher's not going to have a book from you this fall, they're going to find someone younger and more ambitious and more willing to do more things, and they're going to put her book in your place.
Ouch.
Okay.
Ouch.
That's clear. All right. And she wasn't saying it vindictively. She was just saying, this is how life works. And I think she was right. I think that probably is true. And one of the things I've been working really hard to do is to celebrate other people's successes. So like, for example, if I say no to speaking at an event, I have a whole list of other women that I hope they ask in mm-hmm. my set. And I hope they succeed. I hope their calendars are full. I hope they, you know, have every opportunity they want.
Oh, Shawna, you sound like such a nice person. You're winning me over big time. We're going to take a little break when we come back. Lots more with Shawna Nyquist. Her book, Present Over Perfect. We're going to have a great conversation with her. Stay tuned. You're Living to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We'll be right back. Shawna Nyquist is my most awesome guest today. This is Live the Promise, Bill Arnold in for Susie. Her book, Present Over Perfect, Leaving Behind Frantic for a Simpler, More Soulful Way of Living. In her book, she says, here's what I know. I thought the doing and the busyness would keep me safe. They keep me numb, which is not the same as safe, which isn't even the greatest thing to aspire to. Tell me the difference between that. The busyness would keep you safe. What were you thinking that was going to be? And it kept you numb. What does that mean?
Well, I think a lot of times when we think of what we want for our lives, what we want is to know that we're loved. We want to know that our life matters. We want to know that we matter to other people and that the way we're living is congruent to our values. That's really hard. And so a lot of times we just kind of settle for something a little easier. Like, well, just at least am I okay? Not like loved or really connected or like deeply living out my values, but just like, okay, like nothing terrible is going to happen. And then you realize that if all you're shooting for is safe and you're blasting through your life marked by busyness and exhaustion, that what you're really doing is numbing yourself to the reality of your own life. And that's kind of where I got to is I realized I have this life that I'm so thankful for, but I can't even really taste or feel or experience it because it felt like I was looking at my own life through thick glass. I was just so worn out. So I'd lost the ability to enjoy those things that I wanted in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And you said in your book, but this is what I've learned the hard way. What people think about you means nothing in comparison to what you believe about yourself. And you said, essentially, yeah, my identity then depended on outward approval, which can change on a dime.
Yeah, in the middle of this season where I couldn't even really say out loud, but if pressed, maybe I would have been able to say, hey, I'm miserable. I don't like how my life feels on the inside. I don't like who I am. I don't like how the days are passing by so quickly and I'm missing the most important things. But at the very same time, people were saying things to me like, you're doing such a great job, or I admire you, or I would like to have a career or a life like yours. And it took me a long time to learn how to say, even if someone else thinks it looks good on the outside, it doesn't matter if it feels off on the inside. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it doesn't, what matters is how it feels on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Shauna, tell us about your friend Jerry and about the prayer about vinegar and oil.
Yeah. My friend Jerry, several years ago, was teaching a group of us about some different spiritual practices and disciplines. And one of the things that she did, the first thing in the morning, is she said, she's from New York. And so she said, picture like an Italian restaurant with like a checkered tablecloth and how there's a cruet on the table of the vinegar and oil. And the vinegar is at the top and, it rises to the top, it's lighter. And then the oil is at the bottom. And so if you're going to picture pouring it out and you want to get to the oil is the good stuff, the rich stuff, the beauty. But in order to get to the oil, you have to pour out the vinegar first. And the vinegar is the things you're scared of, the things that are hard for you, the small and large wounds of the day. And my prayer life over the years had turned into sort of a progress report for a boss. Here's what I'm doing. I'm working really hard. I hope you like it because I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. But I was coming to God as a boss and a worker, not as a father with a daughter coming to him. And so Jerry's words reminded me that in prayer, you have to come with both. You have to come with all the big and little things that are hard about life, and you really can share them with God. He does care about those things. He can carry those things with you. And I had lost track of that a little bit in just kind of giving him progress reports. And that vinegar and oil way of praying has become very valuable to me. It's still hard for me because I want to just say, like, don't worry, I'm fine. I know you have bigger problems. Mm-hmm. I'm okay over here. But to remind myself, he does have bigger problems. He also has bigger capacity than anything I can imagine. And so the invitation is to come to him with all of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been relearning that, and it's been very moving.
Not only is it a great visual, but it also makes me want to have a big Cobb salad right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of get to that place in the day. Let's say you love your work like you do. You obviously love your work, and there's danger of loving your work to the extent that we might let it control our lives.
Absolutely. And I think that's the challenge. The question, at least for me, is not work or don't work. I love working. I didn't even consider not working. But how do I work in such a way that it's one of the parts of my life and not the part of my life that controls and determines everything else?
Mm-hmm. You talk about in your book, you pinpoint one word, and this is very exciting for me, that changed everything in your life. What was it? One word.
The one word that changed everything in my life was no.
Okay.
I had to learn how to say no. I had to learn how to brave the risky idea that I could not do what someone wants me to do and still be loved or respected or included or trusted. And learning how to do that gracefully and graciously really has changed everything.
Mm-hmm. So if we're dealing with a frantic life, go ahead. You had another thought. Continue.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
If we're dealing with a frantic life and we're always busy, what do we do about trying to figure out a way to get still and be with God? I know you'd made a reference to showing up with, talking to God and giving him an update on what your work schedule is like and life is like. But what about being still with God and standing in awe and being in wonder?
Yeah, for me, I had to start really small, like literally a couple minutes a day. And the more and more often I did that, the even with a really busy schedule, the more often I carved out a couple minutes at a time to sit in silence and kind of connect with God, let him remind me who he is, the easier it became to do that. Mm-hmm. And the more I found that the silence was a really healing place for me as opposed to a scary place. But I would say it took a long time for me to get comfortable with silence. And so if there's anybody who's kind of saying, like, I'm right in that frantic place and I want that silence. In my experience, I just set my phone timer sometimes for 3 minutes or 5 minutes. And I know that's not a lot, but it was enough to really feel like a change in my life. And then you get more comfortable with it as you go.
Mm-hmm. You know, Shauna, there was a part in your book that you talk, I had a conversation with a gentleman on a ferry, and I found that to be very interesting. And this was a little haunting to me because some people can get really good at doing something in their professional life that doesn't translate into their personal life at home. Give our listeners
right.
a little peek into that conversation.
So it was a person I hadn't met before. We were friends of friends. And we just happened to be, you know, kind of the last two on this ferry for a minute. And he was telling me this story. And essentially, some of what he did was he led conferences about, like, creativity and connection and bravery. And he was the main speaker, and he would connect with people in such a profound way. He was very talented and very charismatic. And he loved it. He just ate it up. They loved him. He loved them. He gave everything to the people that he was spending time with in these workshops and these conferences. And they would say he changed their lives. He became increasingly unable to connect well at home, to kind of do the invisible, hard, daily family marriage stuff. Mm-hmm. So he was better at being amazing on stage than he was at being amazing. I'm imagining, like, taking out the trash or listening sure. to details about someone's day. And I think, you know, I spend my life around a lot of pastors and writers and speakers, and I absolutely understand that temptation. It's, you learn how, for better and for worse, to be charming and available and be a good listener and really engage with people. And then if you give too much out of that for too long, you go home and you look into people's eyes and go, oh, shoot, I gave it all to somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm empty, you know?
You almost become a victim of your own industry. You're like the cleaning lady with a dirty house.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And there are hazards. Yeah, there are hazards for every different kind of work. And that's one, you know, for mine.
All right. We got lots more coming up with Shauna Nyquist, her book Present Over Perfect. I think we've got several copies to give away if you want to get on board to get into the drawing to win one of them. Email us at Susie@myfaithradio.com. And of course, you spell Susie, S-U-S-I-E, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Make sure you include your name and address, because as psychic as we are around here, we will not know where to send it if you win the drawing. So that is to win one of Shauna's book, Present Over Perfect. We're going to take a very short break. Lots more coming up on Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back. You having a busy day today? Well, you've come to the right conversation. We're talking to Shauna Nyquist. She's written a book on that very subject, being present over perfect, leaving behind frantic for a simpler, more soulful way of living. Sometimes we just have to calm down. I'm using my calm voice right now. Is that helping? I didn't think so. All right, Shauna, let me say this. When you were talking in one of your chapters about a little bit of jealousy you had towards a friend, and it seems that the constant thing you were muttering under your breath was, must be nice. When she would tell you about her schedule or her family or her day, you were feeling a little snarky and you would kind of, oh, must be nice. And talk about that jealousy and where were you going with that?
So, yeah, I just one of the things I've realized over the years is a lot of times, you know, obviously jealousy is wrong, right? So when you feel it, you kind of just want to push it away. Like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that way. But it's wrong, and it has a lot to teach us about what we really want.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this kind of ongoing thing. Every time I saw this friend and got a glimpse into her life, I would say, oh, must be nice. And then as I took a closer look and really identified, like, what is it that she has that I want right now? And what she had was sort of authority over her own life. Her life seemed right-sized for her, like she wanted to live at a certain pace, and so she did. And it was kind of slow, and there was a lot of room for rest and for creativity. And I felt out of control. I felt like 1,000 people were pushing me 1,000 different directions, and I was living up to so many people's expectations and playing so many roles. And I realized my jealousy is showing me something about what I long for. I long for a life that feels slower, that feels less complicated, where there aren't so many expectations and roles that are pushing me so hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're making her story is making me jealous too. It's like, oh, it must be nice.
I know.
All right, Chana, let's talk about fake resting. You talk about fake resting in one of your essays. Tell us about fake resting.
Well, so fake resting is when the rest of your family is legitimately resting. They're like watching TV, they're doing puzzles, they're playing games on their phones, whatever. They're doing whatever they want to do. And you look like you're doing that. You've got your pajamas on, maybe. You've got a cup of coffee in your hand. It's a Saturday morning. But on the inside, your internal engines are just a mile a minute. And you're thinking, and then I can fold this laundry. And then I can clean out this closet. And then I can run to the store and get this birthday present. And then I can get these 10 emails done. And so the illusion is we're all just having a lazy day. But if they're all resting, and then when they're rested and ready to go on to something else, you snap at every one of them because all you want is a moment of peace. And they look at you like, we've been having hours of peace. What have you been doing?
Yeah.
And so I realized a lot of times the opportunity is there for me to rest, for me to leave things undone, for me to lower the stress level in our house a little bit, for me to choose a less complicated path. And I'm the one that keeps choosing the complicated to-do list, push, push, push way of living. So the bad news is, you know, I create that myself. The good news is if I create it, I can uncreate it. And so that's what I've been working on. I've been working on taking lessons from my husband and my boys that when they're resting, I let myself rest too. Mm. Instead of running circles around them, trying to get done 1,000 invisible tasks that'll eventually leave me resentful and exhausted.
So when you were fake resting and everyone else was really resting, when they wanted to do something, you weren't ready to do it because you hadn't gotten your rest yet.
Oh, absolutely. I looked at them like, oh, you're antsy? Oh, you want to do something?
Yeah.
I've been knocking myself out all morning.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to have to talk about tools in order to help improve our lives. And I think you've got some for us. What are some tools you've personally used on your own journey?
Well, again, I would say silence has been a big part of it.
Let me write that down. Silence. Okay.
One of the things that really helped me was talking with the most important people in my life about these changes that I wanted to make, partially because I wanted their accountability. I wanted them to remind me that this is the path I wanted to stay on, but also because I wanted to shift their expectations of me. You know, if I was kind of the one who never said no, who was always willing to do one more thing, who would always take on one more project, I needed to give them sort of an orientation like, hey, I'm trying to live a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And you might experience this difference. It might be kind of frustrating, and that's mm-hmm. okay. But bringing people into the process early was really, really helpful for me. Again, both to provide a little accountability and also just so that they understood the changes. That was a really helpful thing.
Now, you know that old cliche, if you want to get somebody to help you do something, ask a busy person because they'll usually sign up to help. So you
ask a what person?
Ask a busy person because they're good at helping getting things done. So you probably were that person, and it probably took a lot of rewiring on behalf of not only yourself but the people around you to say that we're going to do life differently.
It did. It absolutely did. It took a lot of conversation. It took a lot of reframing of expectations. It was very much like, you know, one step forward, two steps back. And then I would say I did it very gracelessly for a while, very awkwardly. But it got easier over time, and doing it with people and in the context of community really helped.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's a lot of people listening that would say, I want this simpler life that she speaks of. And I definitely want to start it right away, but I don't know how to get from point A to point B. I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah. You know, the first thing I would say is start with silence, and you'll learn a lot from that.
Okay.
Even 5 minutes a day. 5 minutes a day. If you're as busy as I was for a long season, 5 minutes a day feels like a day and a half. I mean,
wow.
It's so long.
Where would you go get this silence?
I would usually just sit in my house, or
okay.
I would sit in my car, or
okay.
I would, you know, I mean, I wasn't like at a nature preserve looking out at some beautiful vista. I just,
yeah.
I would set a timer on my phone, maybe for 5 minutes, and
okay.
I would do it two different ways. Sometimes it was like a centering prayer activity where I'm asking God to remind me the truth of who He is. But sometimes it was just 5 minutes to kind of assess, what do I want with my life? What's going on in me right now?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're accustomed to living so fast for so long, you stop asking those questions. You're like, what do you mean? We don't have time for this nonsense. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But when I sat down, I learned that there were a lot of things in myself that I hadn't been paying attention to. And when I started listening to those things, that okay, I need more rest. Even just silly stuff like that. I learned to sleep more. I learned to take better care of my body. I learned to be to get more takeout instead of doing everything homemade and handmade.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to say no to every volunteer opportunity that came home from my kid's school. It just little by little assessing. And some of it comes down to being really realistic about your own limitations. And that's hard.
Mm.
You know, I wanted to believe I could just do everything in an unlimited way. And I realized it's not true at all.
Yeah.
I need X amount of sleep. I need X amount of downtime. My kids need X amount of focus time with me per day. And so I can accomplish a lot less than I thought, but I can connect better than I did in those years when I was really busy.
Yeah. So this brings me to one of my big questions, which is on this journey you've been on, which I think has now been around 4 years. And this is a big question. Mm-hmm. What's the big difference between the person that you are now and the person that you were 4 years ago?
I think the biggest difference, the people who experience the biggest difference are my husband, my boys, and then my very close circle of friends, you know, my parents, my cousins and stuff. They're the ones who noticed how fragmented I was, how little of my undivided attention they were getting, how little I had to offer because I was too tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're the ones that are noticing like, oh, you're back. Like you're funny again. You're spontaneous again.
Mm-hmm.
You're willing to try new things again. You're content again. But then also I think I had lunch with a woman that I had never met before. And in the middle of lunch, she said something like, you're such a calming person to be around. And I said, oh, dear heavens, no one's ever said that about me in my life. And she said, well, that's how I experience you. And I thought, oh, my goodness, maybe I really have changed a little bit. I think I used to be a very, I think it probably used to be pretty stressful to be around me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I was going 100 miles an hour, and I wanted everybody else to do that, too. And to hear her say, you strike me as a calming person, I went, oh, that feels really good to me. That means a lot to me. I think progress has been made, maybe.
I think that went a long way with you, didn't it? That comment, that
yeah,
compliment.
It meant a lot. Yeah, it did.
Yeah. So now we've got these new patterns that we're starting to develop, and we're starting to let other people know that we may not be the same person. We're going to say no. We're going to take time to have real rest versus fake rest. So we have to have some routine or some practices in place to help you stay in this rhythm of life. How are you doing that?
Well, for me, spiritual direction is a part of that, centering prayer, the practice of Sabbath. And then, you know, this church gathering that we're a part of that my husband started called The Practice, is a lot of that for me as well, a grounding rhythm in our lives on Sunday nights to receive communion and pray and sit in silence and sing together. I would say there are sort of foundational elements of my life that I experience all through the week, and that's one of them.
I love it. Okay, talk about learning how to play, how we need to be reminded to have play in our lives and have it be life-giving.
You know, I think, you know, kids are born with an innate desire and ability to play, and then if we're not careful, we lose it along the way. And I've been, and I have little boys, so they're just playing all the time, and it's boy play. I mean, it's rough and silly and swords and basketballs and shooting arrows, and we shot off bottle rockets, not bottle rockets, this big rocket launcher yesterday, my son's birthday. And so I'm learning a lot about, they'll be okay if their laundry isn't folded immediately, but they want to play and they want their mom to play with them. And so I'm really working hard at walking away from kind of my internal to-do list in order to be the kind of mom that plays with my kids. And of course, it's good for them because it's good to have that time with their parent, but it's also really good for me. It reminds me that the stakes are not quite so high and that not everything has to be done exactly perfectly. And that sometimes, you know, rolling down the hill and getting grass all over your entire body is worth it for the fun of it. And so I would say they're my teachers in relearning how to play.
Mm-hmm. You and I are so different. I don't want grass all over me. I love your playfulness. Talk a little bit about how other faith traditions have helped you in your journey. I found that interesting.
Well, you know, the biggest one is we have some friends, a married couple who are both rabbis. Mm-hmm. And both in their writing and in visiting their gatherings and in our friendship with them, they've taught us so much about the Sabbath. And, you know, Christians generally experience the Sabbath kind of as a concept, but very few of us have like an actual, very formal Sabbath experience. Whereas a lot of Jewish families, they would say that's sort of the core of their faith experience. Mm-hmm. That's what defines them as Jewish people, is their experience of the Sabbath. And so we've really learned so much from them and would love to emulate some of those patterns in the way that, Sabbath is about silence and simplicity and family time and prayer, and very much is a part of the structure of their weekly rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say that it's getting the slope is getting even a little more slippery, even in church nowadays, when we can go in with our iPads saying, well, my Bible's on my iPad, but if the sermon gets a little bit boring, well, I tell you, I might be checking email.
And we're Isn't that terrible? We say, I'm taking notes on my phone.
Oh, right, yeah.
Sure.
So it does get a little bit slippery when it comes to how are we treating the Sabbath? Are we really doing what we should and giving that day completely over to God? So this is interesting. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Shauna Nyquist. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for the amazing Susie Larson. I'll be right back. My guest today, Shauna Nyquist, is very real and very transparent, and she got a foreword by Brené Brown, so that's pretty cool. Brené Brown's a TED Talk, right? An author, and gave a TED Talk, and I think her TED Talk went very viral, like 27 million views or something. So, way to go.
Totally. I think she is unbelievable. Yeah. I was very, very nervous to ask her, and mm-hmm. I was just absolutely blown away when she agreed to do it. That was a huge gift to me.
Just so you know, it's not polite to name drop, you know? Robert De Niro told me that. And speaking of vulnerability, you have a chapter called Happy Medium, and you talk about practicing hospitality, offering grace and nourishment, and you have to start with yourself before anyone else. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, you know, in our culture right now, and I'm sure you are aware of this, even though I don't think it's nearly as acute for men, but there's so much pressure to look just one certain way. It's not like there are 15 body types and you get to pick one of them and they're all equally good. It's like, for women especially, really skinny, really young. And I'm 40 and I'm not really skinny. And I've been chasing that for so long and exhausting myself and then feeling awful about myself for not living up to that. So I have this internal dialogue that's just vicious. And at the same time, I want people who are around me, people that I'm close to feel so well loved and seen and welcomed. And I realized, you know, I do want to practice very intentional hospitality with so many people in my life. I want to invite them in and make them feel welcomed and seen and loved. But I probably have to start with myself. I don't think you can, you know, berate yourself in one breath and then speak words of love and life to other people outside of yourself. I think it has to start with you, as hard as that is for me. And so that's some of what I'm working on is making peace with medium. With being just kind of a normal person, which I think is hard for a lot of us.
So just to offer people grace and your own love for them, you really came to the conclusion that, you know, you're going to start with just loving yourself. And I think I got that right. Did I?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just at least offering hospitality to myself. Like, you're welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
You're fine just the way you are. You don't have to be a record setting anything. You can just sort of look like a normal mom, and you're welcome in this life and in this house. And
yeah, those,
a lot of times we
those can be very tortured thoughts, can't they?
They really can. Yes.
Yeah,
at least for me, they are.
Well, I would say for most people willing to be totally honest, they're going to all say that I don't like this about myself, I don't like that about myself, and I've got 10 criticisms of my body, and you know, you see supermodels on TV saying that they hate their knees or something. You're going, I give up.
I know, right? But I think that's what shows you kind of how crazy things have gotten. When the people we want to look like, or we believe that we'd be perfectly happy if we only looked just like them, and they're miserable about what they're not living up to as well, you realize, okay, then we've all lost it here.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need to kind of reclaim a better view of this,
mm-hmm.
that there has to be something beyond all of us just knocking ourselves out to look exactly the same.
Yeah. Shauna, you had in your book, you talk about an experience of a couple summers ago that really changed everything for you. Would you share that with our listeners?
A friend invited me on this trip, and it's the kind of thing I would normally just say no to, but because it seemed sort of vague, I was going to spend a weekend at a friend of a friend's house. But it was in this season where I knew I wanted to change my life, and I knew I had lost some of the best parts of who I used to be. And I was just kind of willing to try anything. I wanted to learn. And so I went, and what I experienced there was this such a sense of exuberance and hospitality and play and life. And I would say God used that experience that weekend to remind me, hey, this is who I created you to be all along. You wandered away from that essential self. You decided to be all things to all people and Little Miss to-do list. But the person I created you to be was whimsical and warm and kind and had time for people and connected deeply and wasn't run only by her list of accomplishments or achievements. And so it was a real turning point for my life. Like my husband said, like you came home from that place different. There is a before and after in your life for that. And I would say, I think that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Shauna, what was the hardest chapter in your book to write? Not that you're having a writer's block, but you were dealing with the material in the chapter.
The first thing that comes to mind is there was one at the end called New Fuel. And essentially, I wrote it because I called my editor one day, and she's another writer, and I respect her like crazy. I learn a lot from her. And I called her, and I was like, here's the deal. Like, I've been a writer for years, and at the end, there's always this mad rush of panic and fear and anxiety and desire to perform and not be embarrassed, and it pushes me to finish the book. Well, all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, like I've started to learn about unconditional love really for the first time. Like I knew about it in my head, but I'm starting to experience it. And starting to kind of get off the drug of performance, and I'm starting to be able to leave behind some of my anxieties. That's all good news, except I feel like I just might be able to walk away from this book forever and just like not care. Like I've enjoyed writing it, and you know, it'd be really nice to read a novel right now.
Mm-hmm.
I said that I don't feel terrified and panicked about getting it done and getting it out there. And mm-hmm. she said, write about that. And so I did. And so it's a chapter essentially saying, what fuels us to do anything? If you give up on the fuel of performance and fear and anxiety and competition, if those things are no longer fueling what you do, what is?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit with it for a while. And then I realized, you know what? It's love. I finished the book and I published it because I think there might be other people like me who are aching to experience unconditional love and the freedom that goes along with it. And I will tell that story to anyone who will listen because it changed my life so deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So this book, you know, finishing this book was not about like getting an A+ from my publisher or getting a gold star from my editor or hitting a certain sales number. It was like, oh my gosh, I want everyone on earth to feel this sense of unconditional love and freedom and grace that I'm walking in and living in for the first time in my adult life.
Well, you're getting an A from me, and I'm like those tough East German judges, so consider that a big compliment. All right,
Thank you. Now
you've gotten to a place where you're not fake resting anymore, and you're rolling in the grass, getting dirty with your sons. Give me an idea of maybe one or two things that you're now saying yes to, and you're saying yes to that you may not have been saying yes to before. We talk about saying no, but what are you saying yes to?
You know, I spend a lot more time with a smaller group of people. I would say we used to be more social, more big groups of people, more big parties. And I would say now there's a small group of people that I spend a whole lot of time with, and mm-hmm. that's really valuable to me. The other thing I would say is, and I haven't totally understood this one, but I am so much more drawn to spend time outside and in nature these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it is like I want to feel more connected to God, to the natural world, not to the things that we've made. And so we're kind of changing our family schedules and rhythms so that we can be a little more like a little more country kids instead of city kids. And that mm-hmm. feels really, really good to us in this season.
Yeah. Well, I'm an avid indoorsman, so I don't know what you speak of right now. But I do know that there's a lot of people listening that are so busy and they're so overwhelmed and they're frantic. And they're trying to perform all the time, not to disappoint anybody. And they're probably living a little bit of a tortured life right now. And I bet if they got a chance to listen to this hour that they have found the hope of relief. And I would really love it, Shauna, if you would just pray for those people, if you don't mind, as we close out our time together.
Oh, I'd love to. Dear God, for every person who feels exhausted and isolated, worn out body and soul from a frantic life of pushing and proving, I pray that you will reach out your hand to each one of them and that they will accept, they will take your hand and walk with you into silence, into prayer, into honesty, into hard and worthwhile life changes, and that they would arrive at a place where they live in the grace and freedom that you made us to live in. Amen.
Shauna, you've been great. Thank you so much. Your book, Present Over Perfect, Leaving Behind Frantic for a Simpler, More Soulful Way of Living. We'll have that up on the website at myfaithradio.com. Go to Live the Promise show page. You'll find everything you need to know. And if you want to send this podcast out to your friends, you can do that as well. Thanks for being on the show. And thanks for listening today, everyone. Susie is going to be back up next hour with Gunnar Johnson. Be back